This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The presumed frontrunner bows in tomorrow. Michelle Bachmann preps for Waterloo, and Sarah Palin holds a Times Square summit. It's Wednesday, and time for a
rocket science
edition of the Political Junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Every Wednesday, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us to recap the week in politics. This week, political votes on the debt ceiling and Paul Ryan's Medicare plan. President Obama's former bodyguard declares that Maryland isn't all that blue and announces for the U.S. Senate. Former Bay State Governor Mitt Romney officially hops into the GOP presidential derby tomorrow. Rick Santorum follows suit on Monday. Michelle Bachmann will say one way or the other later this month in Iowa, where non-candidate Chris Christie will also visit, while Sarah Palin's on the road to New Hampshire. In a few moments, Wayne Slater of the Dallas Morning News on the scramble at the Texas State House to come up with a new congressional map. We want to hear from you about how redistricting is shaping up in your state. Later in the program, which TV show do you miss the most? Attorney General Eric Holder misses The Wire. Email us, talk@npr.org. Which TV show do you want to bring back? But first, political junkie Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. As usual, we begin with a trivia question. Hey, Ken.
Neil, shouldn't they make this a TV show? This
I would think be great. They should probably. And then bring it back.
Exactly. Trivia question. Okay, we're talking about Sarah Palin, the speculation about her political plans, whether she runs. Obviously, everybody says if she runs, it would be completely unconventional. So here's a question about another unconventional campaign. Who is the last person to win a major party presidential nomination without winning a single primary?
Ooh, the last person to win a major party presidential nomination without winning a single state primary. If you think you know the answer, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Of course, the winner gets a fabulous no prize T-shirt. And Ken, Sarah Palin insists this is not a campaign bus.
And yet we follow her. Whatever she says, whatever she does, we follow her completely. There are some people who think that this is the beginning of a... certainly it's not a straight talk. We saw...
The Straight Talk Express.
John McCain had a straight talk bus tour in 2000, but there's no talk coming from Sarah Palin. It's a no talk bus tour, I guess. She is traveling up the East Coast. She started at the Pentagon this weekend. She may be going into New Hampshire. That would be very interesting if she goes into New Hampshire tomorrow when Mitt Romney announces his candidacy.
It may take a little longer to get there than that.
But some people still think that, this is a Donald Trump game that she's playing, that she's, you know, a lot of people mistreated her in the media, mistreated her in 2008, and she's returning the favor in 2011.
Well, playing a little coy with the media, but in any case, ask the question. This is what she says.
I'm fired up to share with America what many of the solutions can and should be. It's all common sense, and really, it's not rocket science.
And so she's gone to the National Archives to share the Constitution in the United States. She's gone to Mount Vernon and now Gettysburg on her way to Boston, Massachusetts. Stopped in New York, by the way, and had a pizza with Donald Trump in Times Square.
She's speaking of Donald Trump. But look, again, we follow everything she says, whatever she does. I was watching Fox News last night, and to a person, everybody on Fox News says she's not going to run. Now, of course, they should say that because if they think she is going to run, she loses her contract with Fox News. That may be part of it, right?
Anyway, as you mentioned, Mitt Romney, the presumed front runner, announces tomorrow, and he's going to focus like a laser beam on the economy. They say if you're going to beat Mitt, you're going to beat him on the economy.
Which is what he should have focused on 4 years ago instead of doing social conservative stuff, because his acumen has always been on the economy and his business experience. I still differ with you, Neil, a little bit in the word front runner. I don't think, look, the polls show him with 18 and Sarah Palin with 17. I don't think the fact that he did run once before gives him perhaps a leg up, and he did raise a ton of money. He raised $10 million the other day and will raise a lot more. I still think the word front runner is just far too soon to
pre
premature.
Rick Santorum, speaking of long shots, yeah. I think I'm safe there.
That's
announce on Monday.
Yes, in Pennsylvania, where he represented the state two terms in the U.S. Senate.
And Michelle Bachmann is going to make her plans clear in Waterloo, Iowa. She represents, of course, a district in the neighboring state of Minnesota, was born in Waterloo. That's her hometown.
And a lot of people say that, yes, she is going to enter the presidential race, and she very well could be a strong contender in the Iowa caucuses, given the fact that it is very prone to backing religious conservative candidates. Mike Huckabee won it 4 years ago, and the conservative movement there is very strong, could favor a Bachmann-type candidate.
In the meantime, we have some people on the line who think they know the answer to this week's trivia questions. Speaking of unconventional presidential candidates, who was the last person to get the nomination of a major political party without winning a single primary? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And we'll begin with George. George with us from Norman, Oklahoma.
Hi.
Hi, George.
Well, for this answer, I like Ike.
David Eisenhower.
Well, Ike is wrong because Tina was good, but Ike was never as good. Eisenhower defeated Robert Taft in the 1952 New Hampshire primary. That's really what got him started.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, George. It might have been that D-Day thing that got him started, but anyway.
Politically, though.
Anyway, let's see if we go next to, this is Ken. Ken with us from Memphis.
Gerald Ford.
Well, actually, Gerald Ford also beat Ronald Reagan in 1976 in the New Hampshire primaries. As a matter of fact, he won all the early primaries. It was Reagan who only came on late to make it a close race, but Ford won all the early primaries.
Thanks very much, Ken. Let's go next.
You're welcome.
This is Claude. Claude with us from Washington.
I'm going to guess. I was going to say Eisenhower, too, but I'm going to guess Herbert Hoover.
Herbert Hoover.
We in radio call him Hebert Hoover.
Yeah, you know something? Back then, they didn't really have the presidential preference primaries. And if memory serves, Hoover did win some primaries. But in any way, he's not the last person to have done it.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Claude. Let's see if we go next to, this is Joe. Joe's with us from Norfolk in Virginia.
Yes, hi. I know primaries go back 100 years or more, but I don't think they became important until the 50s.
That's correct.
I'm going to say Tom Dewey.
The governor of New York.
Well, Thomas Dewey did win a lot of primaries. He was the nominee in 44 and 48. But again, I'm looking for somebody more recent than that.
Dewey beat Truman. I heard that.
I saw that in the headline.
Let's see if we go next. This is, let's go to Bill. Bill with us from Jackson, Mississippi. Michigan,
yes.
Michigan. All right. More than one Jackson.
I was about to guess the ultimate dark horse, James Polk, but now that I know primaries didn't extend back that far, I'm just going to throw out a guess and say McGovern?
George McGovern.
Actually, he did not win the New Hampshire primary, but his big victory in California in the primary basically won him the nomination. So McGovern did win some big primaries in 72.
Well, thank you very much. Nice try, Bill. You got two shots at it, which really doesn't count. Peter with us from Redmond in Oregon.
Hello, it's Hubert Horatio Humphrey in 1968.
The Happy Warrior.
And that is the correct answer.
Oh, ding, 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 Peter. Congratulations.
One of the reasons is, of course, he got in the race after the filing deadline when Lyndon Johnson dropped out of the race, March 31st, 1968, as we all remember. Hubert Humphrey waited until the deadline had passed for all the primaries to have gone before he got into the race. So he got the nomination without winning a single primary, and there was bedlam in Chicago, as you remember.
As a result, Peter, stay on the line, and we'll collect your particulars and send you a political junkie no prize T-shirt in exchange for your promise to take a digital picture of yourself that we can post on our wall of shame.
I will do. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. And Ken Rudin, in the meantime, there is what may be a new sex scandal in Congress.
Well, you know, we first of all, the listeners should know that we've talked about this story a lot and whether it's worth discussing. And for the longest time, it really didn't seem to be. And we're gonna eschew all the wiener jokes because we've gotten that out of our system. But we don't know what to make of this story. This is Anthony Weiner, the congressman from Brooklyn, who says his Twitter account was hacked, and basically a photograph of a man.
From the waist down, shall we say, was
sent to a college student in Seattle, Washington, and he says he did. He says that his Twitter account was hacked, and he hired a lawyer. That was all the story. It seemed like it would disappear and nobody cared about it. Yesterday, there was a very bizarre spectacle when reporters, mostly from CNN, but from elsewhere, cornered him and said, did you send it? And he said, I'm not talking about it. Did you send the photos? I'm not talking about it. I want to talk about the debt limit. The more he said he wouldn't want to talk about it. Now, that sounds like a very principled position. Look, enough of this. This could be a completely bogus story. And there are more important things to talk about. But then, you know, you have the Chris Lee, the congressman from upstate New York, who sent pictures on Craigslist, you know, top, you know, shirtless pictures. I mean, it seems to be feeding into a media that's dying for this kind of story. And Wiener could have easily said, yes, I didn't send it, and it's up to my lawyers. But by not giving a straight answer, it just fed the story on, and it's like in its fifth day already.
And he's supposed to be making a statement today sometime. We don't know when.
Well, we don't know, but you know, yesterday he was completely dismissive of the press. It was very ugly. And again, a story that could have easily disappeared, but he by not answering, he let it continue.
We should also note that there is now, in the state of Maryland, well, one person who used to be quite close to President Obama, it turns out, is going to be running for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate.
Right, exactly. The former bodyguard, and Ben Cardin, is up for a second term. 6 years ago, he defeated Michael Steele, elected to the Senate. Again, Maryland is a solidly Democratic seat. No Republican has been elected there for the Senate since 1980, Mac Mathias. But it's an interesting candidate.
We should note that there is an obituary we have to note today. The former governor of Texas, Bill Clements, who sort of reordered things in that state, the first Republican to win there in a long, long time.
Well, since Reconstruction, when he was elected in 1978, I mean, he was a former Defense Department official in Nixon and Ford administrations. When he ran in 1978, he was considered a long shot, but the Democratic governor was beaten in the primary by a more liberal candidate. It allowed him to win. He was elected in 78, defeated in 82, came back in 86, but he is the first Republican since Reconstruction, and basically he, along with John Tower, the senator, basically the founders of the modern Republican Party in Texas.
More on Texas in a moment, where lawmakers are battling over how to draw new boundaries for congressional districts. Redistricting, always complicated, often contentious. It's happening in state houses across the country. How is it playing out where you live? Give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. As it happens, we're going to be going to Texas tomorrow to do the show from San Antonio. In the meantime, stay with us. Ken Rudin will stay with us, too. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
I want to grow up to be a politician and take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Studio 3A today, the latest stop on Ken Rudin's national bus tour. Check out his blog and his podcast. Try your hand at his notorious scuttle button puzzle. That's all at npr.org/junkie. And now to the Lone Star State, where lawmakers are scrambling to come up with a new congressional map. The Texas legislature failed to agree to a plan by the Monday deadline, so Governor Rick Perry ordered a special session. The state gets 4 new seats in Washington based on the last census, and similar kinds of decisions, well, not the happy one of giving out 4 new seats in most places, but similar decisions are being posed in other state capitals across the country where legislatures are proposing redrawn maps and angling for partisan advantage. How is redistricting playing out where you live? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And joining us now from member station KUT in Austin is Wayne Slater, senior political writer with the Dallas Morning News. Wayne, always nice to have you on the program.
Great to be with you.
And this seems like a grand gift to the party in power. 4 seats to give out. Everybody's Republican in Austin. Anybody in control anyway. How come they can't decide?
I know. Look, it took 6 months and they did absolutely nothing. I think the focus of the governor and the legislature was on other stuff. Giant budget problems, other social issues that Rick Perry would like to have passed and largely were passed if he runs for president. Congressional redistricting took a back seat.
This would seem to be a pretty big deal. A couple of those people in the legislature might have ambitions to be sitting in a different house in a couple of years' time.
In fact, there are. There's a very attractive Hispanic lawmaker from San Antonio, Joaquin Castro, who now under this new map is looking at a new district, one of the four new districts as a possible running place. So, yeah, this is important to some folks, but it wasn't important enough to get done. Again, it doesn't make any difference what Democrats want. This is super majorities on the Republican House and Senate, and they didn't make this an issue. Now, that was Monday. Tuesday, when the governor called the legislature back into special session, by that afternoon, he had put this issue on the agenda. That suggests, from what I'm hearing, that after 6 months of inattention, they now have a map that may, in fact, pass very quickly.
Ken?
Wayne, Texas grew by over 4 million votes in the past decade. They gained four seats, and as you say, the Republicans have complete control, and yet, given the fact that we're talking about a lot of minority-majority or majority-minority districts with the growth in Latino voting strength, the Republicans can't just say these next four seats, these four new seats, will be Republican seats.
Well, not only can they not say that because it would not be nice.
But the Voting Rights Act, right.
The Voting Rights Act. You're exactly right, Ken. And that's, in effect, not what they're doing. The map that was unveiled yesterday for Texas basically says, look at these four new seats. We'll give you two of them to Republicans and two of them Hispanic or minority-majority districts that will likely go Democrat. But the reconfiguration of the entire map as the state delegation moves from 32 people to 36 clearly gives nothing significant in terms of a more greater advantage to Hispanics. In other words, after a decade of population growth driven in large part, two-thirds of that population growth was Hispanic, there's really nothing in this new map that demonstrates or represents their increase in population.
So even if they do agree on a map there in the legislature, could we end up in court?
Well, we're going to end up in court always. That's a given. It's interesting. I was talking to a state representative who was at the White House for Super Bowl Sunday. And while he was there, he talked, besides to J-Lo, who was also there, he talked to Eric Holder and said to the attorney general, you know, keep your eye, if you would, on redistricting in Texas. And he says Holder told him, I'm going to keep both eyes on redistricting in Texas. So, yeah, we're going to see this. And Democrats are fairly confident that if the current proposed map passes, that it will not pass muster with the Justice Department, but we'll see.
We're talking with Wayne Slater of the Dallas Morning News, 800-989-8255. As we consider redistricting, how's it going in your state? Email us talk@npr.org. And Karen's on the line from San Antonio.
Hi, I guess y'all are going to be here tomorrow. Unfortunately, I won't be able to see you, but I won't be able to listen.
Okay.
But bring your own water.
Okay, I will do that.
I just feel the con on redistricting is I always got the impression that the Republicans, what their main goal is, if they can accomplish this, they've accomplished everything, which is to get rid of Lloyd Doggett.
They tried
to redistrict him out of office once. It didn't work. You know, he's a thorn in the side of the Republicans in the House, and I was just wondering if y'all had any comments.
Wayne Slater, is that a Republican goal here?
You betcha. She has it exactly right. Lloyd Doggett is the bête noire of the Republican Party in Texas. She's right. In 2003, when Tom DeLay came here and basically redid the districting maps of 2 years earlier, it was Lloyd Doggett who was in the crosshairs. He survived. To show you how, from the Democrat point of view, how egregious, again, from a Democrat point of view, this current map is, Travis County, the most liberal county in Texas, would be divided five ways into five separate districts. And Austin, which is the closest thing to Soviet Russia in Texas, and this is where I sit right now at the University of Texas, would be represented by a Republican. So this is a target at Lloyd Doggett to get rid of him. And obviously an effort for the Republican Party to flex its muscles.
Karen, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And sorry.
Have a good trip.
And thanks very much. And we're sorry we're not going to get a chance to see you tomorrow. By the way, Wayne Slater, has anybody asked Tom DeLay for his ideas on a map here?
Last time I saw Tom DeLay was in court before he was convicted of money laundering in connection with the 2003 thing. But most of what we talked about was his stint on Dancing with the Stars.
Well, that,
at least you have
your priorities
straight. Away from this.
I think you're probably think right about that. In the meantime, you dropped a really interesting nugget there. Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, running for president?
Oh, he says he isn't. And he's absolutely made no moves. There's no apparatus, unlike George Bush 11 years ago, who had really had the apparatus of a campaign in June of 1999. No evidence of anything significant, which I think is a guarantee in this Tea Party year where emotion counts that Rick Perry is seriously looking at running for governor. He told a friend just the other day. He told a friend just the other day that he was shocked. That was the word that Governor Perry used. Shocked at the Republican field, at the weakness of the Republican field. And he asked whether it was possible that his party could produce somebody credible without the kind of baggage that seems to be encumbering other folks. He's looking seriously at this. I'm going to be in New Orleans in a couple of weeks with him at a Republican gathering. He's got four speeches, including one in New York where he's substituting for Donald Trump, who bailed out, speaking to Republicans. I would not be surprised if he gets into this race.
And he plans to visit his close relatives in Des Moines?
They haven't told me, but no specific Iowa plans on the book right now. But I absolutely would expect him to be there. But if he does it, I think he understands. He and his political consultant, Dave Carney, who actually works for Newt Gingrich right now, is kind of difficult. But he and his sort of team understands that this is a different kind of year in which you just show up at different places and you don't have to announce your candidacy like you did 10 years ago, so early. He thinks that there is an opportunity here, and if the party really concludes that that they need somebody else, then he wants to be positioned to be that person. He has the three things, I think, from his side that are important. One is he's credible on financial issues, on fiscal issues. Two, the talk radio guys who don't like compromise like him, especially Rush Limbaugh. And three, he has worked for years cultivating social conservatives and the religious right. That's a pretty strong group of advantages.
Ken?
And quickly, he would be the only candidate from the South, but doesn't he remind you a little bit of Fred Thompson? Could you imagine him really working to get the nomination?
Yeah, I could. To be honest with you, I remember going out with George Bush in 1999 and 2000 and realizing how hard this is to run. Rick Perry, if he decides to do this, truly would work. I remember traveling with Thompson some, and it was palpable, as you remember, that he didn't want to do this. If Rick Perry gets into this, he will want to do it. I wonder, however, if he's raising his name ID and ultimately positioning himself for a vice presidential pick.
I thought you were going to say for a TV show on Fox.
Well, actually, he would be great on a TV show for Fox.
Wayne Slater, thanks very much for your time today.
Great to be with you.
Wayne Slater, a senior writer for the Dallas Morning News, with us today from the studios of member station KUT in Austin. Our focus is on redistricting, what is happening where you live. Nancy's on the line calling from Southwick in Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hi.
I was telling the guy who answered the phone that I actually testified at a redistricting hearing yesterday, and I'm from Western Mass, John Oliver's district, and, you know, bottom line is I don't envy these guys their task at all, because, as you know, we have an extremely powerful delegation, and to try to figure out which one of them has to go away is, you know, it's a completely thankless task. But
Massachusetts has all Democratic members of Congress. They're losing a seat. Somebody's got to go, Ken.
Yeah, exactly. And they're going from 11 to 10. And I think there's a lot of pressure on, at least if they don't force one Democratic member to run against another Democratic member in a primary, then maybe they can get him to run against Scott Brown for the Senate. But this is a very unenviable task, because even though the Democrats control everything, it's a Democrat who's going to lose his seat.
So almost to the opposite situation as they have in Texas. Nancy, what were you hoping to see come out of this process?
Well, I'm hoping that the western part of the state gets to keep Richie Neal and John Oliver, and, you know, other than that, I don't really know, because it's just hard to, you know, to figure out what to do. You know, I guess the best thing to do is go with our getting rid of our most junior member, who is Bill Keating. You know, nice guy, but he is the freshman. So
last hired, first fired. Okay, Nancy. Thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it. We should mention, last week we talked a lot about the election in New York's 26th congressional district. A Democrat, Nancy Hochul, won with surprise election there, sworn in as a new member of the House of Representatives today. But how does that election change the calculations in upstate New York?
Well, that's a good question, because New York loses two seats and the Republicans control the state Senate, so they have a say in what happens. We figure one Democrat from the city, one Republican from upstate loses his or her seat. But now that she, the Democrat,
is in a Republican district,
they have to lose, and you know they're going to have to pick another Republican. But that's going to be fairly tough. There's a tremendous amount of lobbying going on right now in Albany.
We're talking with Ken Rudin, our political junkie, as we do every Wednesday. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Amanda. Amanda with us from Oglesby in Illinois.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, so we've got kind of an interesting situation here. We had four Democrats lose their seats in the last election, and now the Illinois legislature that's under the control of the Democratic Party has redrawn the state to effectively take away four of the Republican seats.
Well, actually, I think it's even worse than that. The map that passed the legislature that I guess Governor Quinn is either about to sign or has already signed, 10 of the 11 Republicans in the state the congressional delegation are either going to be merged with other incumbents or moved into Democratic seats. And so so it looks like as many as six Republicans could lose their seats in 2012, which would wipe out the gains they had in 2010.
Yeah, and I think probably the most interesting one is Adam Kinzinger, who everyone was sort of talking about as an up-and-comer, who's now got to run against Democrat Jesse Jackson to keep his seat.
All right, Amanda, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Email from Marlon in Michigan. In Michigan, we were the only state to lose population and thus a congressional seat. The latest map proposals coming out of the state legislature show that Congressman Sandy Levin would end up facing Congressman Gary Peters. There's some talk, however, the matchup may never happen because Congressman Peters is considering running for Oakland County Executive. All in all, the maps hurt the Dems, but still keeps two majority-minority seats for Detroit, thus sparing Representatives John Conyers and Hanson Clark.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what's happening in a lot of states. For example, in Indiana, which the Republicans control the legislative process there, Joe Donnelly's seat was basically wiped out, but he's announced he's going to run for the Senate, the seat that Dick Lugar holds. So a lot of Democrats are looking to see, well, maybe I should run elsewhere if I can't keep my seat.
Maybe even Washington State.
As Dennis Kucinich is talking about in Ohio.
Let's get Glenn on the line, and Glenn's with us from Columbus.
Hi. I know here in Ohio, Dennis Kucinich believes he's going to be redistricted out. I don't know if that's true or not. And Schwarzenegger tried to get a nonpartisan redistricting plan done in California. And to be fair, he came to Ohio to campaign for the same thing, and it would have benefited Democrats. Is there any state that has like a truly nonpartisan, like computer geek setup system?
Oh, yes, many of them. Iowa just had a map released a few months ago. Iowa, Arizona, I believe New Jersey is one of them. I think California has a redistricting commission. There are more and more states that are getting tired of the way the partisan battles between whoever controls the legislature and the governorship controls the redistricting process. And so they're trying to get more and more nonpartisan, civic-minded redistricting plans.
We lost the plan here in Ohio. It says on the constitutional vote, we lost that chance here.
Right, and the Republicans control everything in Ohio, the governorship, the legislature, and Kucinich's district is, as you say, all but gone.
I see. Thanks.
Thanks, Glenn. Interesting mentioning California. The first time, I think, in its history, that state is not picking up any congressional seats.
That's absolutely true, and that is a shocker. The big gain, of course, is Texas, but having said that, they're still going to redraw all the 51, 52 seats in California, and there's going to be a lot of battling between Asian groups and Hispanic groups for political control. A lot of white Democratic seats in the Los Angeles area has seen a tremendous influx of Latino political strength. So even though there'll be no change in the number, and it may stay hasn't been as many Democrats as it was before. There will be a lot of new faces in the 2013 delegation.
And quickly, let's go to the state of Missouri.
Well, Russ Carnahan, who represents the 2nd District there, his district has been wiped out by the Republican legislature. He could run in St. Louis against Lacey Clay, who's African-American, or he could run in a new suburban Republican district. Some people are saying he should run for lieutenant governor, which is late far than Mel Carnahan once held.
All right, Ken, we're going to ask you to stay with us. Ken Rudin, our political junkie, is with us every Wednesday, but we're going to put him on the spot on another subject in just a minute. Coming up, the Attorney General yesterday all but ordered the creators of the HBO show The Wire to give us all another season. Well, he was kidding, mostly. But if you had the power, what show would you bring back to TV? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Drop us an email, talk@npr.org. Ken's picks. No, it's not going to be McHale's Navy. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.